it's hard to get it just right in corporate blogging, because you know no company is going to reveal all, and yet you have to reveal enough to make it compelling and make readers want to come back.
This is podtech.net. Welcome to Marketing Voices, featuring the fresh perspectives of innovative marketing leaders and examining how social media is changing marketing throughout the world. Here's your host, Jennifer Jones.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Jones, and today on Marketing Voices, I'm going to delve into corporate blogging and how to use blogging as a part of a marketing strategy. So I'll be talking about using blogs for thought leadership, community building, and customer relations. And so to discuss all of this with me today is a newly minted author of a corporate blogging book that is just fantastic. I've read the whole thing, and it's very, very good. And her name is Debbie Weil. And Debbie is not just an author of this book, but also a publisher of a blog called BlogWriteForCEOs.com, and also helps companies figure out how to really incorporate blogging strategies. So Debbie, welcome to Marketing Voices.
Thank you, Jennifer.
So I read the entire book, and as I said, I found it very instructional and very geared for those who really need a primer on blogging. But what I'd like to focus on for this podcast is essentially chapter 4 in your book, where you delve into using blogs as part of a marketing strategy. So let's start with why you think corporations should use blogs for marketing strategy. Again, this is for externally focused blogs.
Well, the easiest, quickest reason is because if you have a blog, which is, remember, just a kind of website, it's an interactive website, an instantly publishable interactive website where readers can leave comments and where you, the blog publisher, can instantly create new web pages, you get much higher rankings in the search engine results. So for any company, you know, large or small, whether you're General Motors or a tiny little entrepreneurial company, that's one of the key goals, is to market and get yourself out there, get your brand, get exposure, and be seen and get found online. And it just kind of works like magic. Keep blogging on a topic people are interested in. They put it, type in those keywords, and your blog entries will come up at the top of Google results. So that's a simple and usually pretty convincing reason to incorporate blogs into your marketing strategy.
So can you give me, we mentioned at the very beginning of the show that that we're looking at blogs sort of as thought leadership blogs, community building blogs, and customer relations blogs. Can you give me an idea of some good thought leadership blogs, in your opinion?
Sure. I mean, one of the ones I like to use it as an example is Sun Microsystems' Jonathan Schwartz's blog. Jonathan is the first Fortune 500 CEO blogger. He's actually been blogging for a while, and he was recently became CEO. And he is one of these bloggers that he's very thoughtful, he's very articulate, he writes well, he talks to a very savvy kind of industry niched audience, whether it's customers, competitors, the media, analysts who are interested in what Sun's doing and Sun's platforms and that kind of thing. And he manages to make himself look good and to make Sun, again, the company behind him, look like they're really a player. They're absolutely right there at the bleeding edge, and they know what they're doing. And that's kind of the point of a thought leadership blog. There's many others. A guy named Randy Baszler does one for Boeing. His is a little less, I'd say a little less edgy, maybe a little bit less interesting. There is that fine line between writing that's really compelling, and you really feel it's real. It's really offering a glimpse of either what the executive is thinking or what the, you know, the backstory of what's going on at the company, and being a little bit more bland and sort of, you know, the official story. It's hard to get it just right in corporate blogging, because you know no company is going to reveal all, and yet you have to reveal enough to make it compelling and make readers want to come back.
So that's probably, again, why you shouldn't consider having your PR department actually write the blog.
I would say absolutely not, unless you have some closet blogger in your PR department who happens to be a sharp writer and is very clued into how the blogosphere works and how you really talk to your audience in your blog. I mean, it's conceivable you might have someone like that. But in general, the PR department is so used to parsing. You know, everything has to be vetted and reviewed and, you know, triple checked. And by the time it comes out, it's so bland and dull, and it is, you know, it's such corporate speak that no one cares.
Right.
No one's going to listen. No one's going to read it.
So what about community building blogs? I mean, what are some good examples of those?
Well, you know, I think Microsoft's thousands of blogs and also Macromedia, that kind of company, are just the best examples of community building. And what's interesting is that these are employee bloggers. They're not senior executives who are blogging, and they're often developers. They're techies themselves, and they're reaching out to their specific audience because, in a way, they're doing product development with their audience. So Microsoft, there's a lot of technical stuff that goes on, you know, in building the next version of Windows and so forth. So all those programmer types are blogging and talking about little things that are happening or little bugs that are being fixed. And they're getting input back from other developers, you know, the third-party developers on the outside. That really is a kind of a community, if you will. That's a little different. I suppose you'd call that very B2B.
Mm-hmm.
A little different from a retail company building a community with... And I'm just thinking, you know, L.L. Bean, you know, building a community with their customers, not as likely to happen. It's a different kind of thing.
So do you find that there's good ROI on these blogs for these companies and also with companies you advise?
Well, that's what everyone is asking, you know, and it's certainly a legitimate question. In the book, I call it ROB, Return on Blog. You've mentioned this a term to me today that I thought was fascinating, ROI, Return on Influence. The answer is, yes, you have to talk about it. And yes, there is a way to measure it, but I think we're still in a sort of a soft measurement. You can talk about SEO, search engine optimization, which is search engine results. You can talk about buzz, word of mouth marketing, that is sort of, you know, getting recognized around the blogosphere as a company that is open and transparent and willing to talk and listen to what readers have to say back. So that's, you know, that's brand building. And, you know, I mean, I could throw back to you, well, okay, I mean, what are the exact metrics for PR? I mean, you can say, okay, you get one mention in the Wall Street Journal, you know, what is that worth? You get, you know, one mention on a couple of blogs that get a lot of traffic, you know, what is that worth? Well, it's worth a lot. But you can't always put a dollar value on it.
Right. Well, I have to say I'm in agreement with you. And so for all the listeners, before the interview started recording, Debbie and I were talking about ROI, and I said that here, you know, I'm a big believer that it is return on influence, and it is like a PR strategy where you ultimately have to measure it as it relates to a corporate brand and how powerful it becomes through influence, and not so much on how many downloads or whatever, or how many links you get, because ultimately it really is about the power of the word. So. Again, we've just seen with all the work that we've done in podcasting as well that it really is a return on influence, not so much return on investment. But you know, back to some examples on the you know, on the customer relations side, what are some good blogs there that you've seen in the corporate world?
Well, one of my favorite is Google, of course, which is right there in your backyard. And Google has a whole bunch of blogs, but they do have one that they consider their corporate blog. And I use this one as an example, and I spoke at length with one of the senior VPs who's very much involved with the blog. They use this very much as an adjunct to press releases, but it really becomes customer relations because they're sidestepping the press, if you will. So, for example, when Vincent Cerf,
right,
one of an internet pioneer, joined Google, whatever it was, about a year ago, they, of course, issued a proper press release. And the same day, he came out on the blog and he wrote an entry that said, you know, surf's up. In his little, you know, and oh, isn't it so great to be here with Sergey and whatever the other guy's name is. And then he links back to the press release. So it's a very thought-out marketing PR strategy where Google is using their blog to kind of offer the backstory to what they would put out officially in a press release. And, of course, that backstory is being read by a lot of customers who may or may not read the press release. So it is very much a customer relations strategy because Google is actually kind of a mysterious place, and they don't tell all.
Right.
And yet they're making it look like they're, you know, they're just dropping a few crumbs there. They're opening the door a little bit, giving a little bit more of a glimpse of what really goes on, you know, behind the door.
Right.
And people, customers, prospects just love that. You know,
yeah.
The People Magazine approach. I call it the People Magazine approach to marketing. Everyone really secretly wants to know what's really going on. And not, by the way, that Google's really going to tell everything that's going on, because of course they're not. you know, with that the whole uproar over Google Print and Google scanning books and so forth. I mean, it was hugely controversial and hugely complex. And they did a fair amount of blogging about it, even having some of their legal counsel post, you know, entries to the blog. But are they telling us everything? No. But that's realistic.
Yeah,
that's why this is a marketing strategy. This is a business tool.
Right. That's very realistic. So but what are the downsides of using blogging as a marketing tool?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, General Motors Fastlane blog is an example, I think, of one that is a very successful, actually one of the most long-running, certainly Fortune 500 corporate blogs. And it's written primarily by Bob Lutz, who's their senior VP of global product development, and some other executives. And that blog has a specific focus, which is cars, as in product.
Right.
That focus, the blog is not about GM's finance. It's not about GM's declining market share, all the problems it's having. And they're very clear about that. So the downside is if you have a blog, it becomes well-known, it's well-read, it's followed, and people get this impression, okay, they're being transparent, they've opened the door, now I can come in and they'll give me whatever I want. So it could be that what people want is to complain about their, you know, the GM car they just bought, and say that, you know, something doesn't work, and they somehow expect a response. So, I mean, in that sense, there can be a misunderstanding mm-hmm. on the part of the reader or the customer that, oh, yeah, they have a blog, great, you know, now I can just, like, dash right in there and get a, you know, a specific response to my complaint. And the answer is, well, no, we're not going to give you that. That's not the purpose of the blog. You know, the other downside is you've got to keep the many downsides in the sense it is work. I mean, mm-hmm. you got to keep the blog going. You have to keep writing it. You have to keep making it interesting and compelling. You have to find the right people to write it.
What about legal? Are there any real legal aspects that, should give everyone a heads up on that side?
There are legal aspects, and they fall into two buckets. But for both of these, generally, common sense prevails, and it's pretty easy not to make mistakes. And the two buckets, as so to speak, are one, stuff you shouldn't reveal on your blog, as in company secrets, proprietary information, you know, something about a new product that hasn't been released yet, stuff you shouldn't reveal. And then the other bucket is saying bad things about other people. And then they sue you. Obviously, you don't want to be libelous. You don't want to say something libelous about a competitor or even about anything that would be inappropriate that way. But generally, it seems to me, and from all the experience I've had with clients and talking to thousands of people, is common sense prevails. Most executives know what to talk about, what not to talk about. They've already signed, you know, various things when they join a company. They know what they're not supposed to talk to the press about, forward-looking statements and that kind of thing. Why would it be any different on a blog? It's just another form of digital communications, if you will.
Right. So they just need to be obviously really smart about it and realize it's just that. It's as transparent as anything, and they've just got to be conscious of what they're saying.
And as you know, Jennifer, many companies now have corporate blogging guidelines. I have a bunch of them in the back of my book that you can look at. Sun Microsystems has one. IBM has a long one, and you can basically sort of copy them if you need to start guidelines for your own company. And they're very clear. I mean, they different companies have different guidelines in their employee handbooks, and basically it's just an extension of those. So in some companies, you're not allowed to talk about who your customers are.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, if that's the case, then you just make that clear. That's part of your corporate blogging guidelines.
Great. Well, that's a good lead into the ending because we're going to have to end this at this point. And I've been speaking with Debbie Weil, who's a new author of the book available on Amazon called The Corporate Blogging Book. And Debbie, is there another way that they can kind of make sure they get a hold of the book in a good way?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. You should go to the companion book blog, which is at thecorporateblogging.com, and that's thecorporateblogging.com, where you can download Chapter 1, and I have links to other places where you can buy the book. You can also find it in Borders and Barnes & Nobles, and there's a great business website for buying books called 800ceoread.com, and you can just go to Amazon and type in The Corporate Blogging Book, and it'll pop right up.
And hopefully we'll make her a bestseller, because it is a very helpful book, and I would definitely say it should be a must-read for everyone in marketing. So Debbie, again, thank you for being on Marketing Voices.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And so to all of my listeners, thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, may all the voices you hear be marketing voices.